Sarah, you and I have both been pregnant a few times while working in the emergency department. What was that like for you?
Yeah, so I didn't really struggle with morning sickness or anything like that. But for me, it was more about secrecy. When I was pregnant with my first child, I had had two miscarriages before that. So I was very careful about not wanting to divulge the pregnancy and kind of keeping it very close. And I was a resident at that time. And so it was really difficult to do that and still be in the middle of shifts. And I'd kind of sneak off into the trauma bay to ultrasound myself and make sure that that little baby was still there. With my second pregnancy, I felt a little bit more confident, but I was a fellow and applying for jobs. And so I didn't want to divulge anything about the pregnancy just in case it would affect my chances of getting a job.
I remember the first time that I saw you, you were actually very, very pregnant. So my memories of you are also of your pregnancy.
Yeah, at some point it becomes obvious.
At that point, it was super obvious. You know, I think everybody's experiences are obviously different. I also was pregnant three times in the emergency department while working. And my issue was syncope or presyncope. And in fact, one time, Sarah, I was finishing off a night shift. I was on a rotation where I was in the adult emergency department. So I was placing a fem line in a elderly patient at the end of a night shift, already tired. I'm in like end of my second trimester of pregnancy. And I prepped her and I had the needle ready to go in. And the last thing that I remember was, why is my face so close to her body? Specifically that portion of her body. And the next thing I knew, I woke up on a chair, very surprised, being held by the attending, very aggravated that I was in that position. And the patient was yelling, "Is she okay? Is she okay?" And evidently, I nosedived into the field and everything that was draped by that field and was pulled off of the patient and held there until I decided to rejoin the rest of the world. It is quite an adventure growing a little fetus while working.
Welcome to EM Pulse, bringing research and expert opinion to the bedside.
We're your hosts, Julia Magana
and Sarah Medeiros.
Welcome back to EM Pulse.
If you couldn't tell from those stories, today we're talking about the pregnancy experience as an EM physician. Now, wait a minute if you feel like this doesn't apply to you. Don't change the channel quite yet, because you definitely have a colleague who is pregnant or will be soon. And we want this series to recognize the very real issues that surround creating, growing, and feeding a little human as an EM physician. You know, while everyone's experience is unique, I think there are some similar themes that many of us face.
Sure.
There is a deep sense of responsibility to our colleagues and our work that we don't want to disrupt, and we often push through really tough times. There are physical changes, and some are obvious, and others may not be.
Absolutely. So let's continue our series about growing little humans while working in the emergency department with our colleague, Dr. Katrin Tyler, professor of emergency medicine at UC Davis. Katrin, what are some of the risks to the pregnant physician and the little fetus running around with us on a shift?
There's a fairly good body of research now that shows that, you know, across a big population, people who do rotating shifts or shift work or extended duration shift work are at much higher risk of having a complication of both early pregnancy and late pregnancy. So obviously the main complication that we see in early pregnancy in the first trimester is threatened or complete miscarriages and all of the other sort of complications that run alongside with that. In the later pregnancy, in the third trimester, we see preterm labor, small for gestational age, premature rupture of membranes. And, you know, those are all complications of a pregnancy that can affect that baby and then that individual for a long time to come. It's going to be difficult to create schedules for the first trimester because very often, you know, that sort of first trimester is happening before the schedule is confirmed for emergency physicians in particular. And that's not even touching on sort of some of the just symptoms of pregnancy, like hyperemesis and so forth. But the third trimester, we, I think, really have an obligation to do a much better job of protecting pregnant people scheduled during their work in the emergency department.
So what can we do as a system to help our colleagues that are in both of those phases? I mean, you said it's a little bit more challenging during the first trimester to actually adjust and plan for the schedule. Is there something we can do during that first trimester?
One of the things I'm pleased with about our department is that we do a pretty good job of protecting people's times if they are ill for whatever reason. And we have sort of started to move away from the come to work no matter what, you know, so that if you are in fact really ill, then we have a system in place whereby you can get coverage for that. And it's essentially a sort of a no blame system. You know, we're really fortunate, and a lot of smaller departments don't have that ability to cover for each other like we do. So, for example, if somebody's in the first trimester and they find themselves, you know, with intractable nausea and vomiting, then we do have the ability to move that person off the schedule or use some telehealth or some of those kind of processes that can cover for people. But, you know, the short duration between sort of the onset of the first trimester and the clinical schedule coming out does keep that as a challenge. The third trimester is an entirely known event. We know when it starts. We know when the pregnancy is most likely to be complicated. So, you know, there are some definite structural changes that departments should really consider putting in place for that final 12 weeks of a pregnancy.
And I'll add my own story. I had a miscarriage with my first pregnancy on an overnight shift as a resident on Christmas Eve, which was really rough. But then I did get pregnant again. And when I was going through that pregnancy, I mean, it did take me a while to tell anybody after miscarriages. You're very careful about that. But then I was sort of also proud of just wanting to be treated like everybody else. So I didn't want to be different because I was pregnant. I remember being 9 months pregnant and intubating a patient, kind of moving my belly to the side to try to make that work. But I was kind of really proud of this. I can do anything. I'm a strong woman. Doesn't matter if I'm pregnant. Let's talk about perception. How do pregnant people want to be perceived?
Excellent question. I mean, I think there's a lot of different responses to that, depending upon how you came to the pregnancy, what number pregnancy this is for you, what your experience with prior pregnancies have been like, what your physical and medical complications of the pregnancy look like. You know, I was just having this conversation with somebody else yesterday about a completely different issue that, you know, pregnancy is a physiologic issue. It's not actually a disability. It's not actually, you know, it is a normal part of the human experience. And the way our healthcare system works, we've medicalized it to such a degree. And so, you know, for some pregnant people, life is pretty much normal. And for other pregnant people, that's not the case at all. You know, they have a very challenging time with the physical challenges of being pregnant. And we kind of have to make room for all of those experiences if you're going to have a workforce that gets pregnant, which we do. So, you know, I think one of the things that I've seen develop over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years is that we've moved away from, or at least started to move away from, some of the misogyny of why do I have to cover for this person, towards this is part of our workforce and this is what happens, in just the same way as if someone breaks a femur, we cover for them, right? And so I think, you know, part of what you're describing earlier comes a little bit from where we were still in the realm of we had to prove ourselves. And actually, we shouldn't have to prove ourselves. This is an amazing process where you're making a whole new human, and it's going to take its toll. Sometimes people hardly have anything, but a lot of times people have, you know, an enormous amount of fatigue or intractable nausea and vomiting. It doesn't necessarily stop in the first trimester, or they just have a lot of other symptoms, and that can make an emergency department shift really challenging. I mean, they're challenging enough on a good day when you're not pregnant. I think we have to be a little more expansive in how we support our medical staff.
You know, I read this really interesting article getting ready for this, and it was called "Congratulations, You're Pregnant. Now About Your Shifts: The State of Maternity Leaves, Attitudes and Culture in Emergency Medicine." It was Western Journal of Emergency Medicine 2017. And it really resonated with me because almost half, 46% of respondents reported feelings of guilt or negative emotions during their maternity leave. And I think that's incredibly interesting in the context of what you're talking about, where this is just a normal part of the human experience, but yet we have this burden of guilt. And I have to say, on my second maternity leave, I genuinely felt very guilty about it. And I don't know that I appreciated my leave as much as I could have, because I felt like, oh, crap, I got to get back. And I've left other people in a lurch. And, you know, it added to that discomfort of it and that perception of, like, I'm being perceived as not a team player because I'm out on leave.
Because you're a human. When you stop and think about it, it's really pretty wild. I mean, I'm pretty sure that our nursing colleagues do not experience this same level, you know, and partly that's just the strength in numbers component, that, you know, we are fewer. And so therefore it is more impactful when we're off the schedule for a period of time. But I think, you know, for robust emergency departments in this century, we really have to do a better job of anticipating that, you know, at some point, many of our clinical staff are going to need time off for whatever reason, and pregnancy is one of those main reasons. And so you just have to build in a system that has enough buffer to cover for those clinical absences. I had to tell our then vice chair of operations that I was pregnant at a time when I hadn't told anybody else, you know, because of what it meant for the schedule. And it was just like, this is like weird and not right that, like, I have to divulge this really intimate medical stuff to somebody else.
Right. I got hired on as faculty starting on July
1.
I gave birth to my second child on July 2nd. And so I had a lot of feelings of guilt because here I am the first few months as a faculty member, and I felt like I wasn't contributing because I was on maternity leave. And interestingly enough, I don't think it was all my perception either, because at sort of my review later on that year, there were perceptions that I had not done nearly as much as my colleague who was working on a lot of the same projects I was. And so there was kind of no room for that, you know, 3 months of maternity leave. So I think, you know, there is the guilt about it, but I think there's still some stigma there too.
Yeah. Although, ironically, I have no recollection of that happening, even though I was already faculty when you became faculty.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that.
So I think, with so many of these things, right, we remember the details about it so much more than anybody else does.
It's a really good point. And, you know, one of the other points that was really interesting in that survey to me was that 53%, like just barely half of women reported supportive attitudes from colleagues during their pregnancy, and only 43% reported supportive attitudes during their maternity leave.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, I shouldn't say shocking, but it's really harrowing, maybe is the right word, that a little bit less than half of people felt supported during their maternity leave. What can we do as, let's take it from a system standpoint first, and then as our colleagues, what can we do to help support those people? What are things that we can put into place?
I mean, a shout out to the university itself, who actually has really pretty excellent maternity leave policies. The parental leave policies are a little more complicated. But, you know, in terms of for either adoption or if you have given birth, you know, you do get that full 90 days of leave, which is, sad to say, in the United States, definitely an outlier, and quite remarkable that we get that level of support from the university. That is certainly not the case in other institutions, and it's not the case in private emergency departments. I've only had two children, but, you know, both times, 12 weeks was really sort of the minimum amount of time before I felt like a capable human again. And, you know, my first pregnancy, I was still a resident here. And so I was sort of technically back at 8 weeks, which is, you know, less than ideal. So I think normalizing that this is part of the human experience is important. I think also normalizing time off work for other health concerns is also important. And I think, you know, the fact that 90 days also applies to a broken femur or whatever other clinical condition people find themselves with is enormously helpful in creating that feeling that everybody has this protection against sort of severe illness or physiologic events. And I think what happens has happened over time, and it hasn't completely removed the stigma. And, you know, I mean, Sarah, to your point, I also think that, like, sometimes people who've not been through the process of childbearing don't realize just what a huge change it can be. And actually, somebody gave me this great book before I had children and said, I was a really good mother before I had kids. And I'm like, yeah, that's so true. You know, just like you just don't realize, you know. Anyway, I think, you know, over time, as we normalize time off for illness, pregnancy, whatever it is, there's more of an acceptance that this is how we do things and it's how we create longevity. And so I hope that over time, you know, that becomes more prominent. Obviously, you know, changing culture is the most challenging part of what we do. And at least in this country, there is a tradition of, you know, for the last 50 years of having very minimal maternity leave or time off after birth. And, you know, that is not the case in other countries, particularly European countries and Scandinavian countries, where they have very extended periods of childcare leave.
So from a systems level, really is like that top down is really the best approach. We can advocate with inside of our own systems for a reasonable maternity leave, supporting other people in that process. And then maybe if somebody's looking for a job, it's one of the questions that you ask, and that will make those places hear it loud and clear that that's what we're looking for in a job, is a place that's supportive of us during those moments in life.
Yeah. I mean, it's really disappointing when I hear residents come back who have been looking at private emergency departments, and it sounds like it's the 1950s out there, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they're not allowed to directly ask many of these questions, but they're sort of asked around, you know, their plans for having children and how it will impact the schedule. And that just really seems pretty sad in this day and age because, you know, unfortunately, the period of sort of that fast career growth really overlaps with your, you know, the last possible childbearing years. Many doctors have put off parenthood for decades. You know, the people who didn't go to college mostly started having children in their early to mid 20s, and we're at least a decade after that. It's not just the pregnancy, it's getting pregnant and staying pregnant and all of the complications of that. So it seems unrealistic of those employers to think that they can sort of really lock down a person's future in that way.
What about on an individual level? What are some things that we as individuals can do to help to mitigate bias?
Well, this is a basic human experience, and whether you are, you know, a man or a woman, that's how we move forward as a species, is by having children and, you know, just having some compassion and understanding that, you know, the person who is pregnant has had, you know, to some degree, not that much control in the grand scheme of things as to when they choose to become pregnant. I think we have done a good job as a department of being, you know, supportive of people being pregnant and taking leave and, you know, finding scheduling solutions around that. And I always like to talk in sort of well-being about the sort of the shared responsibility of both the employee and the employer, you know, the health system and the employee, so that you have a reasonable discussion and that you're not telling people at the last minute or you know, the employee does their best to try and communicate clearly to the employer, and the employer acts in good faith and tries to protect that person. And then from those conversations, you can have open conversations within departments or face to face, or, you know, that you're not hiding that you're pregnant, you know, like many people have had to do in the past. You know, we're sort of, yep, you know, out and proud about it and feeling relatively confident that those declarations will be supported. Is it always going to work? No. But I think in general, the healthcare workforce is moving towards being more supportive about this, but we still have a long way to go.
It feels to me like it has gotten a little bit better within emergency medicine as we now have more women in senior leadership positions and just senior women in the department. When I was a resident, that wasn't the case where I was, and it felt very different than our culture now when I see, you know, some of our residents who are pregnant who have full professor level faculty that are advocating for them. I think that there's a difference there.
I totally agree. Yeah.
You know, another interesting point with inside of that survey was 70% of participants worked extra shifts for a colleague during her maternity leave, with 80% of those respondents reporting neutral or positive attitudes about covering the vacancy. So at least when they're responding to a survey, the majority of people are supportive and do feel supportive, yet less than half felt supported. So I think some of it is, you know, the individual feeling a little bit guilty. Some of this is like old system perceptions in place about needing to be the same as, you know, our colleagues, no matter the gender. And then also some of it is that we're not saying these things out loud. We're not being like, hey, this is a normal part of the human experience and it's okay. We've got this. And so I think that as colleagues, we need to say that out loud as well.
One of the things that sort of is exactly that point, you know, that pregnant people often try to work to the very end of their pregnancy, really for two reasons, I think. One is that sort of sense of guilt that they don't want to abandon the team and they want to be seen a full player till the very end. And the other is we just don't have the leave policies that support a truly adequate period of time off after the delivery. So when we were developing our third trimester approach, one of the things that I felt very strongly about was that you were off the emergency department clinical schedule from 36 weeks. And the reason was because I can't tell you how many times I've been activated for call by somebody who went into preterm labor, got put on bed rest for whatever reason in that final month, that is really a fairly predictable response to an emergency department shift. So in a way, taking the pregnant person off the clinical schedule is a way actually of protecting all of us, because most of us would rather be scheduled in advance and just know that it exists. And, you know, you probably don't even really notice that there may or may not be an extra half a shift on your schedule compared to getting called in at the last minute. You know, we created a strategy whereby now you're off the clinical schedule from 36 weeks. You can still do the telehealth process because obviously that's definitely lower impact. And we took people off nights, or allowed people to opt out of night shifts in the third trimester, so from 28 weeks, because there is pretty good evidence that night shifts in particular predisposes people to preterm labor and small for gestational age deliveries.
What about paternity or partner leave policies?
This is certainly something that's in a bit of a state of flux. And I think the University of California as a whole has recently moved to more expansive parental leave policies, but they're still fairly anemic in comparison to what other countries offer, but much better than what had been offered.
So let's say that I want to go to my department or to my system or to my group and help them to come up with a reasonable maternity, paternity leave policy. What are some of the components that you suggest that they include with inside of that policy?
For the pregnancy component, it's actually relatively straightforward because I think there is a reasonable body of evidence now that suggests what pregnancy outcomes are affected by shift work. And so, you know, just using the science really to help guide what some of those protections might be. You know, how much time people get off after the delivery is going to be a little more determined by what the federal rules are, which is there's no federal maternity leave, what the state protections are, and then what other sort of leaves people can put together aligned with what your local resources are. So, you know, I totally get that if you are in a small single coverage emergency department in a rural area with limited access to locum physicians, that, you know, your ability to craft 3 months off after maternity leave is going to be very, very challenging. Not impossible, but certainly challenging compared to a department like ours where, you know, we have over 50 faculty. That gives us a lot more flexibility in terms of covering people for a period of time. But that's true of every single human resource decision that is made. And in general, those smaller emergency departments generally are less busy. So it may be less of a big deal if you are back to work, you know, at 6 to 8 weeks. I still think that's a big challenge from a physiologic standpoint. But between those very small emergency departments in a rural environment and great big academic centers like ours, there are thousands of community-based emergency departments with large numbers of physicians. And I do think that they could probably do a better job of looking at what some of their pregnancy leave policies look like and how they structure those shifts, especially during the last trimester. I think some of those big community departments are going to have big human resource processes. And I think that over time, things can change within those systems with an application of the science. You know, we know that pregnancy outcomes are impaired in shift workers. It's time to look at what some of those outcomes are for your physicians. You know, you could do it like a little survey and show how many people ended up on bed rest in the third trimester and advocate for moving the needle a little bit so that some of those protections are changed. You know, our policy for the third trimester, we don't take people off the schedule. We just allow people to opt out of night shifts if that's what works for them. And there is still going to be some people for whom, for whatever reason, night shifts might be their preferred shift. That's also fine. This is, you know, really that sort of shared responsibility discussion between what works for you and what works for the health system.
Ketrin, what do you think is the future of leave policies? Are you optimistic about it? Do you think we'll ever catch up to Europe?
I do not think we'll ever catch up to Europe. I mean, I think that there are probably states that will do a better job than others in terms of recognizing that events exist in people's private lives that intersect with their working lives. And we should do a good job of trying to accommodate those, whether that's a normal physiologic event like a pregnancy or an illness or an injury, especially for pregnancy. It's, you know, a very time-confined event. It doesn't actually go beyond a really prescribed amount of time. So, you know, from the beginning of pregnancy to the end of your maternity leave, you know, using a 90-day is pretty much exactly a year. That's actually a pretty short amount of time in somebody who's going to be working with you for many, many decades. So I'm somewhat optimistic that there will be better protections, at least in this state. It's a little hard to tell how it would go down in other states.
Ketrin, anything else you think we should know?
To your earlier point about attitudes, I think that sometimes as pregnant people, we really feel a burden to be everything to everyone. And now I feel a little differently about that it's okay to dial it down a little bit during that period of time, that actually your primary responsibility is to the fetus that you're growing. And, you know, it's okay to put that first for the period of time. And I think especially when you're early in your career or you're in a new job, like you were just talking about, Sarah, it can be really hard to make those decisions. And I think that's the culture that I hope we're moving towards, that we can be more protective.
Pulse check.
Pregnancy is something to be celebrated. It is an important part of creating a positive world around us. This is how we perpetuate our species. Okay, this is basic, but when you are being asked to cover for a leave, it is important to remember this is life.
So if you are looking for a job, ask about the leave policies and the culture around taking leave.
If you are a pregnant person working in the emergency department, this is your story to share. But it is okay to recognize that this is an added challenge to an already difficult job. As a colleague, it is important that we create a culture of celebration around pregnancy. It is a relatively short period in the span of a career. If someone shares that they are pregnant with a wanted pregnancy, celebrate with them and ask how you can support them. Work together to create coverage. Give them a space to stay hydrated and fed.
And as a department, take a look at your own policies and consider family-friendly policies and practices.
Well, that's it for this episode.
Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes.
And thank you to our department for creating a culture of support during pregnancy. I know I felt supported.
And thank you to OWEN Productions for being supportive of this podcast.
Until next time, stay curious, stay inspired, and stay tuned.